Hi, I'm Heather.
And I'm Brittany.
We are the Okayest Moms, but we're also creatives, businesswomen, and best friends.
This podcast was created as a community for the modern mom.
We know you're doing your best despite the conflicting messages that you aren't doing it as well as someone else.
We believe in self-care, mom friends as our sanity, and that motherhood looks different for everyone.
Most of all, we believe that you are more than just mom.
So join us as we talk about a range of topics from motherhood to frivolous reality TV and everything in between.
Welcome to the Okayest Moms podcast. Hi, Heather. How's it going?
Hey, pretty good. How about you?
Besides this being the longest month of my life, it's great.
It really is. But the good news is by the time that people listen to this, it will possibly, I mean, in theory, already be February.
If time keeps going, although it feels like it's standing still.
I'm pretty sure it's frozen in place.
Well, it is actually a really good time to talk about our next topic. We have another summer series episode for you. It is all about motherhood and mental health. Dun, dun, dun.
Which is not a new topic for us. We've talked about this many times. And I feel like it kept coming up in other summer series topics that weren't even really related to mental health, but it really is this pervasive, overlapping topic in just about everything we do all the time.
Totally. It's that, what is that cliche that is repeated constantly? You can't pour from an empty cup.
Put your own air mask on first.
Yeah, that one.
Yes, those things. Exactly. Yes.
Yes. So I really loved, this was one of my favorite summer series episodes. It's just, we obviously have talked about it a lot on the blog and elsewhere. I struggled with postpartum anxiety and depression. I still struggle with it. And so it was just really nice to have this conversation where you realize it's totally normal. This happens to a lot of women, and it just makes me feel like I'm not crazy.
Well, and I think it's easy for anybody to identify with these feelings, even if you haven't been officially diagnosed with anything. Like the way you're feeling doesn't have a fancy name, I think you are still going to identify with a lot of these things. I think it's a perfect time of year to talk about some of these things because the holidays are over, kind of like these big life breaks that kind of interfere with kids' schedules and routines. Like we're in a good stretch of year where they're going to hopefully, you know, no one gets sick. They're going to consistently be at school. You can kind of like get back into rhythms. And that I think for me is always a challenge because I get really bored. Which is going to be a shock because I do love consistency and routine, but it also like I get really bored and then I start to get really grumpy and get really, and I'm more easily annoyed. And that's kind of when things start to spiral. Like I can't do the Groundhog Day thing. So
yeah, no, I totally agree. It has an Enneagram 7.
God.
And that's your 7 wing, by the way.
It totally is. Yeah. That's another pervasive topic between us is the Enneagram. It's either mental health or the Enneagram.
Yes, exactly. Which they're kind of related. Like I use a lot of that Enneagram knowledge when it comes to my personality and what I need to fill my cup.
Yeah, so that's true. It is a good resource for that, I guess.
That's a topic for another time.
Yes, I'm sure it will come up. Well, one thing I really loved that Andrea had mentioned, she talks about this committee in your head. And as an award-winning overthinker, that was something that really resonated with me because I know how to make up a story about things that could happen that aren't going to happen at all. So that really stuck with me.
Yeah, me too. I think about it like almost daily, actually, because I'm not really an overthinker, more of an avoider. The committee in my head is more of a try to guess what other people's motives or I do this a lot with my husband. instead of instead of taking what he says at face value, it's like, okay, so what did he mean by that? Does he want me to take out the trash? And that's how my committee comes into play in my life. But yeah, I think about it often.
Which is funny because my husband is the most, he's going to hate that I said this, but he is so straightforward and, like, dare I say, simple that, like, whatever he says is exactly what he means. But I read into everything he says nonetheless. So
I feel like it, show me a marriage where you don't do that. A little more about Andrea. She is a counselor, a mental health expert. She has a child and family development degree and a master's in counseling. She founded Bloom Healing, which provides individual and group counseling, specializing in addiction, anxiety, depression, sexual abuse, trauma, and childhood behavior. She is a mom of three, and she is a lovely human. I really enjoyed our conversation with her, and I hope you do too. So with all that said, let's jump into the episode.
Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay. So I've been in mental health for about 10 years. I've been in private practice for about 7. And I mostly work with women. I love working with women. I have male clients and families, but women are my favorite. I do anxiety, depression, trauma, faith, crisis, and transition. I do group work. I work with abuse and addiction. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're so glad to have you here. This is a topic that is near and dear both to myself and Brittany as well. Brittany shared on the blog about her struggles with postpartum depression and anxiety and ways that she's coping with those. Now that can I say that it's over? I don't know. I think it's always something that you're always working through, but please correct me if I'm wrong. So why don't we start by talking about what you think it looks like to be what mentally healthy looks like?
I think that's a really interesting question. And I think it's almost easier to say what it doesn't look like. So being mentally healthy does not look like your house being clean or running a marathon or having like a really fantastic checklist that you get checked off every day. It doesn't look like a weight or a talent. And I think it gets mixed up. So oftentimes I'll have women come in and they will feel like because they don't look like everyone else, they must not be mentally healthy. And that's, I really don't think that's what it is at all. My definition of mental health is to be able to be your best of your potential, who you are, living fully in who you are and your potential. And I would also say knowing yourself. Mentally healthy is having insight into who you are, what you need, having compassion for your own pain, and being kind of fearless and giving yourself compassion, even when everyone else around you may not understand it.
Definitely. I love what you said about what it doesn't look like, because so many of those things that you mentioned, I feel like those are when I feel like my mental health is out of whack. Those are the things I try the hardest to control and to make look nice. And so if my house is really clean, that's probably a good clue to everyone around me that I need a break.
Right. If I start a home renovation, it's usually a sign that something's falling apart in my life. And so I'm like hyper focusing on this one thing I can take care of. And I think it's important to remember that it looks really different for every person. So for a particular woman, I can use myself as an example. When I was dealing with my own postpartum emotions, I needed structure. Structure and regimen was really, really helpful for me. And it helped me to feel grounded and definitely helped abate my anxiety. For a different person, they might really need a lot of flexibility. Structure could be very anxiety provoking for them. So they might need to just be able to just move hour by hour. For some people, exercise is a fantastic tool. And when they're mentally in a great place, that's part of their regimen. For other people, it isn't. It really is knowing yourself and knowing what you need to be. And that the way we get that is trial and error. We have to probably hit points in our lives, all of us, where we feel ungrounded, anxious, even depressed, to know our tools and know what we need to be healthy.
Definitely. That's so funny that you mentioned that. I saw a quote the other day that said, you need to go through an experience that really like strips you down and brings you all the way down to your core so that you can find out who you really are. And I just, it really resonated with me. And it's funny that you mentioned that because it's along the same lines.
I think that's one thing that I can just speak for my clients, the group of women that I work with, and in my own experience, that a lot of times there's this false idea that if something's not going right in your life, you are failing. Mm-hmm. So if you're doing life right, things should be going well. Your kids should be behaving, you should be healthy, your home should be running well, your marriage should be good, your extended family relationships, your girlfriends, your job, all of it should look a certain way, and that means you're succeeding. And that's just absolutely not true. The truth is that all of us will have periods of, you could say, death and rebirth or falling down and getting up, but we all have those. And that's an important part of the process. And if you skip that part, you don't get the growing, you don't get the tools. So leaning into it, when things come up that are painful and difficult, instead of looking at it as a failure, it's just this opportunity to grow. It's an opportunity to learn.
Right. So what are, now that we know what it is and what it isn't, what are some things that you think we can do to help keep us mentally healthy?
Okay. So this is a checklist. I'm going to give you a checklist, but I want to start by saying that it's not a checklist. So these are just some ideas. These are things that I've learned over time working with women. The first one is going to sound trite, but I think it's really important, and it's learning to listen to yourself. So you are your own expert, especially mothers. Mothers have incredible intuition, and yet we often look for information outside of ourselves. I can remember at one point, like doing a Google search late at night on like how to do help something for my child, and like realizing one time, like, what am I doing? Like, I'm listening to all of these strangers, and yet I know my child. Like, I know their heart, I know their needs. So one is just learning to listen to yourself. Culturally, we come from a culture, I think, that does not value negative emotion. So sadness, anger, fear are looked down upon. And yet I would say that they are probably your greatest tools. So one thing I say to clients right off the bat when they come in is, get curious about your emotions instead of judging them. They'll often say something like, I don't know why I can't get over this. Why am I still angry? I shouldn't be angry. I'm such a baby. Why am I so sad? There's nothing to be afraid of. And the truth is that instead of judging that emotion, look at it and be real curious about where it's coming from. Sadness means I've been hurt. Anger means I need to protect myself. So that'd be first thing, learning how to listen to yourself. And good ways to do that would be slowing down, having a little less distraction, keeping a journal, having close connections with people that can reflect back to you. Like, it sounds like you're really stressed out, or it sounds like you're really angry. What do you need? And the cool thing about intuition, I'll add, is that science is starting to back it up. Intuition's pretty spot on. I mean, they have found that in terms of mother's intuition, there was even a study done about women who've been in some sort of a traumatic experience. They usually had an intuitive knowing right before it happened. I mean, our intuition's pretty spot on. So it's learning how to nurture it and help it grow. Intuition gets shut down when we're children. Even in healthy environments, like in a school environment, a lot of times, maybe you feel afraid of something, and then someone says, don't be afraid. Oh, it's not scary. And so you just kind of learn to shut down that part of you. And it's just learning how to pay attention to it and not shame it, not call it a drama queen or I'm being too much and I have too big of emotions, but really just embracing the emotion.
Yeah.
The next thing I would say is having interaction with others in real life. So online interaction is great, and it's opened up so much for women. I know for me, I have a 16-year-old and I have a 1-year-old. When I was raising him, it was so isolating. There was not the social media world that we have now, where I have this whole array of information and resources for me. So it's absolutely a gift, but I think sometimes it can get in the way of real life interaction. So it's getting people in your real life, connecting with people. The cure for addiction is connection. The cure for anxiety and depression is connection. So it's a lot of times it's having deep connection, and that means vulnerable connection, honest connection, letting people into my mess, letting people into my pain, letting people into my real life, and not this kind of pretend facade that sometimes we're all guilty of doing on social media. The next thing I would say is to really look at and work on comparison. So comparison of me to someone else and comparison of children. I noticed that a lot. Women will come in and say something like, you know, my son's doing this, but my neighbor's doing this. Is something wrong with him? And it's learning to let everyone have their own kind of path and journey. So comparison, I think, is a really big one to look at. And then the last piece, and I would say this is probably the most important piece, and it's the thing that we will all probably spend all of our lives working on. It's not something you get done in a day, but it's learning to have self-love and self-compassion. Fearlessly compassionate for our own pain. It is really easy to show up for a girlfriend when she's hurting. It's really easy to say, you've had a tough day. That's so hard. But when we're hurting, usually our inclination is to say, buck up. You shouldn't be hurting. You're being dramatic. We're really good at minimizing our own pain, but it's making space for it, loving it. And what goes hand in hand with that is also making space for our flaws. Compassion for the fact that we're a human, having a human experience. And so we're going to be flawed. We're going to make mistakes. We're not going to know everything. We're going to mess up a lot.
Yeah. I'm definitely guilty of that myself. I can cut anybody else all the slack in the world, but if it's me doing the same thing, then it's,
isn't that interesting?
It is. Yeah. Can you expand a little bit more about what the emotions mean? You touched on it really briefly.
Yeah. So I look at our emotions as our teachers. So if I historically, I was raised in an environment where big emotion wasn't really super acceptable. So I just kind of learned how to shut it down. And so then it's not shocking or surprising that in my early 20s, I started having a lot of anxiety. I think anxiety is our body's way of saying, I have been trying to speak to you for a while and you're not listening. So I'm up in the ante a little bit. So for me, if I feel a big emotion now, it would be pausing and asking myself, what is my heart, my soul trying to talk to me about? What's it trying to teach me? And it's using any emotion is welcome. There is no bad emotion, even anger. And that one gets really scary for people because they confuse anger and rage or anger and violence. But anger is a teacher. Anger is my way of saying I need to protect. I need a boundary. I'm at risk. And it's a phenomenal teacher. So it's leaning into the emotion, paying attention to it and welcoming it and then learning from it. Especially with kids, I think that's a great one, is to just start with like, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry. What do you think your heart's trying to tell you? And even just kind of peeling back the onion and looking at the layers. So a lot of times anger is a secondary emotion. So anger is covering up fear. Most of the time, I think it's fear. It's usually fear or hurt. So once we can get underneath it and we can figure out what the wound is, then we can meet the need. We can say you need connection or you need quiet time, you need alone time, you need safety, you need a boundary. For me, a lot of times anger is my body's way of saying you need a boundary, that someone's moving into your space and it doesn't feel okay. And so you need to set a boundary.
I like that. I saw this graphic one time of a way to explain emotions to kids, and it took the characters from the movie Inside Out and it kind of combined them together. So anxiety was fear and sadness. And so it kind of like, and it like used the colors to put them together. So you could see how like the two together could make a new emotion.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And we don't have to demonize emotions. Like fear is not bad.
Right.
Fear's phenomenal at protecting us. Fear doesn't mean we don't do it. Right. Like a lot of times with kids, if I'm afraid, that means it's a no. That's not necessarily the case, but it is a great teacher. And it can help me to know I need support. I need someone with me when I do this, or Right.
Definitely. Yeah, it's interesting because I, like you said, I grew up not being able to express emotion a lot. And so I'm not very good at like identifying my own emotions. And so my daughter, her go-to right now is I'm scared. Whenever she doesn't want to do anything, it's I'm scared. So I'm through her, I'm learning to identify emotions. And so I'm like, well, you're not scared. You just don't want to do this right now. Like you're a little nervous about it. Like, let's talk about it. And so, yeah, it's hard to, do you have any tips for talking through emotions with your kids like that?
Sure. So the first tip I have is going to be counterintuitive. Most of the time, what we want to do, our natural instinct, and please, moms out there, do not shame yourselves for this. Every one of us have done it. But what we want to do is we want to push it down, make it smaller, shut it down. So
right, because we don't have time for it. It's often like edits, we're trying to get out the door or like, yeah.
I want to pick my shoes and I don't want you to wear those shoes. And so there's a tantrum, we're getting out the door or we're in the middle of the checkout lane, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone's done it. And also I think our kids' emotions pull out our own emotions. So this is my biggest piece of advice to moms is do your own emotional work.
Yes. Because
you will only be able to give them the space that you give yourself.
They
Much room for fear, that's how much room for fear you're going to give your kid. So working on being comfortable with your own ugly, your own big emotions. But the first thing I would say is to validate what they're feeling. So, wow, that's scary. Whoa, that's hard. Man, that's tough stuff. I don't like it when people treat me like that. I can hear that. That's really big. Even just saying the emotion, whoa, you're angry.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of anger, quantifying it. So sometimes I'll say something like, are you angry this much or are you angry this much? Are you angry as the swimming pool? Are you as angry as the ocean? And just feeling heard, it does wonders for all of us. I mean, imagine if someone just said to you, man, you are so angry and that's okay. There's just like a calming that comes over our whole bodies when we just feel like someone gets it.
Well, often that's all you want. It's just someone to validate it.
True, absolutely. I remember when I first started out in private practice, I was commuting like about 45 minutes to an hour for my practice. And my husband's job was about 10 minutes away. And I remember one day I was driving home. I was doing this commute every day and I hated it. And I was driving home. I was trying to get to one of my son's sports events and I was stuck in bumper to bumper traffic. I wasn't going to make it. And so I called my husband and I said, I'm so frustrated. I'm stuck in this traffic. It's making me crazy. And he said, oh, it's not that big a deal. And I remember like visually in my head being like, I'm going to dismantle him. Like, I'm going to take him apart. Like, it was so infuriating. And so that was a really great day for he and I to learn about validation. So I taught him there on that phone, like, here's what I needed you to say. I needed you to say, Andrea, this sucks.
Yeah.
It is not fair. So frustrating. And I don't know how you do it. And it would have been over right then. If you would have said that, I probably would have been like, oh, it's not that bad. Like it would have been over. We just want to feel heard and understood. So first thing is hearing them, quantifying it. And then after that, then it's affirming. It's giving them a positive. So it would be something like, you can be angry and you can be kind. You know, you can be afraid and you can be brave. It's okay to ask for help. What can I do to help you? It's just finding a way to plug into the need.
Well, so often I found that my kids are just mirroring me, and what I'm ending up having to say to them is what I need to be saying to myself. So
yeah.
That's always fun and humbling.
It really is. It really is.
So back to motherhood. How does being a mom affect your mental health? Because I have to be honest, for me, that was my like ground zero event, just like stripped me down, humbled me. And that's really when like mental health became on my radar, because it was like, hold on a minute. I've never felt like this. Like, I feel like a legit crazy person. So,
yeah, I think it is for most women. And truthfully, I think if it doesn't disrupt you a little bit, I would question. Like, motherhood is this, it's complex. So you want to have the hormonal piece and just, and what I'm talking about today is more about the things that you have control over. Mm-hmm. You have no control over the hormonal piece. right? So you have that piece, and that's a whole different ball of wax. That's medication, seeing a psychiatrist. But you also have kids will pull out all of your fears, all of your weaknesses, all of your insecurities. And part of that, I think, is because you are so deeply invested in them. There's not a creature on this earth you love like them. And they start to define you. So if my kid is behaving well, that means I'm a good mom. And if my kid is acting like a maniac, well, then what does that mean about me, right? So it's a phenomenal time to do the work of differentiation. It's a phenomenal time to learn that I am actually not them, and their poor behavior is not me. And I call that containers. It's learning how to allow them to have their own choices, their own beliefs, their own feelings, and not have it be a reflection of me. That's really a simple sentence to say here to you. That is tough work. That is tough work.
Yes. Yeah. I feel that one. Especially I feel like my kids are 4.5 and 3. So I feel like, especially at their ages, I feel that even hard. Has that gotten better as kids get older? No.
Yes. No. So I feel like you learn it, and then you just have to keep relearning it with each stage. Mm-hmm. And I think up until adolescence, your kids in a lot of ways are a mirror of you. So they really like you for the most part, and they want to be like you. They want to do what you want. They want to please you. And so adolescence is a different time. So adolescence is this time. It's developmentally appropriate. Your kids should do it. I want to start by saying that. If your teenager thinks you're an idiot, you're doing something right. They should. They should start pulling away from you. They should start developing their own thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, and they will usually be polar opposite of yours. So that's healthy and normal, but it definitely is triggering, and it's going to pull up a lot of your own stuff. You lose a lot of control in teenage years. So prior to this, you had a lot of say, and then you have to learn how to let go of that. So again, I have a lot of moms that come in either in early adolescence or when their kids start leaving the house and they're parenting an adult.
Right. Yeah, I can see that would be a big shift.
Yeah.
In your experience, the more like in touch with your emotions you are, is there anything you can do to be emotionally ready to support your mental health as you go into motherhood? Or do you think that everyone feels this shift no matter what?
It's like asking, can I prepare for an earthquake? Sure. You can. There's absolutely things. You get some water in that house and, you know, have a survival kit. But truth be told, you're not going to know how it hits you until you're actually in it. The two pieces of advice I give every woman that comes through my office, no matter what, is the first thing is get a support person outside of your spouse or your partner. So get a support person, somebody that you can be authentic with, someone that will show up for you and that you will show up for them, and really work on that relationship. That's usually an assignment I actually give, and I won't do therapeutic work with a client until they have that in place. So it's that important. The second thing, and this is something that I do with all my clients, it's called dailies, but I ask them to commit to do one thing every day for themselves from one of these four categories. And the four categories are spiritual, physical, emotional, or self-care. And, I just want them to get in the habit. So when they first start, I actually have them write it down every day, write it down and commit to someone else that you'll be accountable for it. And once you get in the habit of doing that, you can feel pretty fast when you're not. You'll know it. Things will start falling apart. Your fuse will be shorter. You'll be definitely more eruptive. So I would say that's good advice for moms, is to get in the habit of doing something for yourself every day. There's studies done on caretakers. So if you have an adult who's caring for their elderly parent or someone with Alzheimer's or someone who's got a terminal illness, the studies have found that the stress of that is so high that a lot of times the caretaker actually passes away before the person they're caring for. I mean, it is incredibly stressful on your psyche, on your body. So think about parenting. I mean, if you've got years and years of no sleep, you've got years of isolation, you know, you'll have days on end where the only people you talk to are irrational 2-year-olds who are throwing things and yelling. And it's an isolating time. And it's a time when you feel like, I think a lot of women feel like they're under a microscope, like people are watching how you're doing it and if you're doing it good enough. It's a tough it's a tough thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's a rewarding thing, but it's hard. And so getting support and taking care of yourself are probably the best ways you can cushion all of the stress.
Yeah. What would you say to someone who, gosh, the question just left my brain because my brain doesn't.
It'll come to me. It'll come to you.
Okay. I think I got it back. So when I first had my daughter, my oldest, I felt like I couldn't do any of those things because for me, being a mom meant like I had to put her first and I didn't have time because I, truth be told, she was a very fussy baby and she never slept. And I just felt like I was like in this manic state all the time that I couldn't put into words to even ask for help. So what would you say to somebody that feels like they don't need those supports or like they don't have time for them or that that didn't matter?
So there's a couple pieces to that. So I'm going to kind of break it up. Mm-hmm. The first piece, I think it would, I would call it like mothering messages that we all have. We could also put it under the category of shame, but it would be like, I think we all have this thing that's this internal committee in our head. They are absolute assholes. I mean, they're the worst, but they are in there and they have a really loud, authoritative voice. And it says things like, good moms don't need that. Good moms don't have time for that. Good moms have it together. Good moms know what to do naturally. Yeah. Breastfeeding comes easily to good moms, right?
My committee, yeah.
That, the committee is a pain in the tail. I mean, it really is. And it will show up in the absolute most heartbroken moment of your life. And it'll be like, see, you aren't a good mom. Good moms have it together. You know, you get on Pinterest for 5 minutes and that committee starts piping it. Look at her. She's making homemade baby food. Whoa, what are you doing? You're sitting on the couch, right? Like that committee is a real pain in the butt. So one is learning how to identify your committee and then learning how to call it for what it is, which is absolute toxic shame lies. And fill it with truth. The fastest way to attack the committee is truth. So the truth is that good moms take good care of themselves. The truth is that there is really no such thing as a good mom. We're just moms. We're just doing the best we know how, and we don't know what to do most of the time. It's almost always a crapshoot. We just try something out, see if it works. If it doesn't, we try something different. That would be one piece of it, is I think learning how to find your own committee, identify it, and start working on shutting it down. The other thing is getting creative with how I had it with my third. She was insanely colicky. And that was also the time that I had the worst postpartum. And so for me, it was going for a walk, but wearing her. That was the time that she'd be quiet and she would be still as if I was wearing her. But for I started to learn, and every person has it. You know, they talk about the five love languages. Mm-hmm. I think we all have different spirit languages. Our spirits respond in different ways, our souls. So outdoors and nature is really soothing for me. And for someone else, it might be swimming. It might be exercise. It could be going to lunch with a friend and just connecting, getting some sort of a massage or a pedicure. It's figuring out what speaks to your soul and getting creative with it. And you'll be amazed when you're in absolute chaos, even 5 minutes of just being alone in a room can be like luxury, right? Yeah.
Definitely. I just want to remind all of the attendees that there is the Q&A box. If anybody has any questions that they want to drop in, we're going to do a few more before we get to the Q&A section. But if you have them, make sure you throw them in there. What challenges are really unique to moms that you see in your practice, that some things that you keep seeing over and over?
Yeah. So one thing I'll say is that I think that it's probably one of the easiest times to be a mom and one of the hardest times to be a mom. So like I said earlier, you know, raising my 16-year-old, I didn't have Google. Like I just didn't have anything. So it was going to the public library and checking out a book if he had a rash. And now you just have all of this information at your fingertips, and that's great. The thing I see more now than I've ever seen before is women coming in with this crippling comparison. And I think it comes from social media. So they see Barbara, who is making her own baby food, and her kids are all like in these matching outfits, and they're standing in like a sandy beach, and they've got it all together. And they start to think that that's Barbara's real life. And that's what Barbara's, you know, every day looks like. And it's not, obviously it's not true. No, it's not true for any of us. We're all humans. We're all figuring it out, but it really starts to take a toll. I think comparison, I think an oversaturation of options and choices. So getting, again, like getting on something like Pinterest and having these elaborate birthday parties, or, and those are all wonderful things. Like, I don't want to say that any of those aren't wonderful. They are, but I think it's really important to recognize that although Barbara has mastered baby food, that's one thing, but the next woman has mastered, you know, cloth diapers, or the next woman has mastered writing. They don't have them all mastered. It's one thing, and we start to collect it. I would say comparison is a really big piece, and I'd say isolation, because we rely so much on the social aspect of connection. We're not doing the real life connection, sitting down with another human, being honest, being vulnerable.
Sorry, just another connection I'm making here. Yeah. I was just listening to a podcast, and they were talking about a New York Times article that talked about, you know, in the season of graduations, how about the average student, and how, like, we always often celebrate, like, the valedictorians who, you know, do all these things or win all these awards or whatever. But what about, like, high school or college is the only place where you're expected to be good at everything all the time, all the subjects, all the sports, supposed to be a kid. And it's just not like that as an adult. And so I love applying that to motherhood too, that, you know, like, I love to throw a party, and I love to do all the, like, Pinteresty stuff with it, but I haven't cleaned my bathrooms in, like, 6 months probably. So, you know, we all have our thing that we like, and we don't show the thing that we don't like to do.
Right. I know for me, throwing a party is self-care. Like, it is, it makes me feel more like myself. It feeds me. It's joyful. So of course I'm going to post that, but I am not posting that, like, when it comes time to teaching kids to read, I want to, like, bang my head against the cement. Like, that sounding out syllables is not something I'm great at. It's not something that's in my wheelhouse. Right. I love that what you mentioned about school. I think that's a great analogy for all of this, which is, culturally, the American culture is really focused on success and consumerism. Every culture has their thing. So some Eastern cultures really focus on family. That's their, like, definition. Others, it's religion. But America is success and consumerism. So again, that's where it's really easy to compare what other people have, what other people are doing. And one assignment I've been giving clients lately is this idea of owning both your light and your shadow. So I just had a client actually post about this on social media, and I thought it was really beautiful, but it was kind of in the context of the song, "This Is Me" from The Greatest Showman. And she would say, "This is me." And then she would say, like, "I have a hot temper and I'm phenomenal at making pasta. I am a loyal and I also hold grudges." Like, she was owning all of the pieces of herself. I think it's really easy to love ourselves in all of the good, successful, beautiful pieces, but it's learning how to embrace our shadow. It's learning how to embrace the fact that we're flawed, and that I can be loving and also sarcastic, that I have parts of me that are biting and that are painful. And then I also have beautiful things, and it's embracing my whole package. If you want to work on anxiety, that's the fastest way to do it. Start embracing your shadow. Start embracing the parts of yourself that are ugly or difficult.
I love that. I love that so much. And I think it's a hard for, cause I'm a very negative person. That's my initial natural reaction. And so it is kind of a struggle for me to put, like, positive things on social media. So in a way, for me, that's been a good thing to see all of the good things that are in my life. But it's also, you have to remember that, like you said, there's a shadow to that, to everything you see.
Well, and for you, your work may be owning your light more. You know, it might be easy for you to say, "Look at my house, it's such a mess," but it's not easy for you to say, "I sat down with my kids today and I played for an hour and I was really present," right? Like, It's learning how to own your good things and to embrace that part of you too. Really, we have to, it's like two sides to a coin. You cannot have one without the other, and we have to own both pieces. So my light is just as important as my shadow. And if we get one out of whack, that's when we start to feel bad.
I love that.
Yeah.
Are there any common books or resources or things like that that you find yourself recommending over and over again?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot. And it depends on, I'll start with a parenting book. I've probably recommended this book more than anything else. And it's How to Talk So Your Kids Will Listen, mm-hmm. and How to Listen So Your Kids Will Talk. I love that book. I think it teaches validation in such an easy way. I hand it out to married couples and have them read it because it's so simplistic. You can learn how to validate in your marriage.
I bet it has some applications for husbands as well.
Right, right. Yes. I also really like Loving What Is by Byron Katie. I think that's a great book.
I love Byron Katie. I've caught her on a few different podcasts. And at first I'm like, she's a little nutty, but I really love her.
Yeah, she is a little nutty, but in the best ways. And she, I like it. Again, I like that it's a simple format. She gives you four questions that help you to start turning around your thinking. I'd recommend a book on codependency to everyone. I think everyone could do codependency work. So there's a new one out. I'm trying to think. I think it's called The New Codependency. I think that's what it is. But I also really like Codependent No More. And yeah, great. These are starters. Awesome. I could go on and on and on with books.
I'm sure. Yeah. Let's see. I'm double checking here that we don't have any questions. Yeah, Brittany says, give me all the resources. I found podcasts are great because they're easy. I can catch them in snippets. I like to put them on. This is like my little self-care thing I do. Like on the off chance I get to shower by myself, I'll throw a podcast on. And I like that I can catch it in chunks of time and not really miss anything. So
absolutely. I'll add another book I really like. It's a parenting book, but it's The Awakened Family. And I like it for parenting, but I also think it's a really great book for learning. When we talked earlier about containers, learning how to let your kids have their own behavior and their own emotions, that book will be a fantastic resource in learning how to separate your child's behavior from your worth.
Got it.
Yeah.
I think I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but if there's anything else you want to add. If you have a friend that is struggling with their mental health, what would you recommend doing? How can you, I know you, we'd mentioned before, you know, just validating their feelings. But are there any other specific things? How can we be like their support person? Like you had mentioned.
I think one would be asking them what they need. I'm really hearing, you know, if they need someone to go walking with, they need someone to listen. I also think that doing your own work is one of the best ways to support your friends. And it's actually probably one of the best tools. Most people who bring their kids in for therapy, I end up just seeing the parent, because the truth is it's usually us. It doesn't mean that we're doing it wrong. It just means we've got unfinished work. So doing your own emotional work, and being comfortable with other people's ugly or yucky emotions. That you'd be amazed at how hard that is. So, you know, I've had clients that are dealing with loss or grief, and they have a lot of voices in their ear that's like, you should be over this by now. How long are you going to be sad about this? And really that just shows that we're not comfortable sitting in sadness, or we're not comfortable sitting in someone else's grief. And so it's doing your work to be comfortable with uncomfortable emotions, you know? Someone sad or depressed, can I sit in that with them? Can I love them there?
Got it. Yeah, I love that. So oftentimes I find myself like I can feel the emotion bubbling up, and mm-hmm. I there's one side of my brain that's saying, no, don't, like, don't yell. Don't, you know, like you're getting really, you're saying things you don't mean. And I can feel like that anxiety happening. So are there any like specific tips or tricks, to do right in that moment? Or maybe if you're starting to feel yourself fall into a depression, or you're in a more anxious state.
Yeah. Okay. So those are separate. So we'll start with the anger piece. One thing I would say is regularly dealing with your anger will help you not have explosions. The way anger works is it's bottling, and eventually your body is not a bottomless pit. Like, it can't hold it forever. So you will eventually pop off. Guaranteed it will happen. So if you don't want that to happen, we got to deal with it every day. Anger is best expressed physically. So exercise is a great outlet for anger. Even like art, something using your hand is a great outlet. I recommend all my clients get a punching bag in your garage or somewhere where you can go out and just lay into it. It's a great tool for teaching kids too. So with my middle son, I can see when it's starting to bubble up for him. And I'll usually say, you go out and do 100 hits on that bag and then we'll talk about it. And most of the time, if he hits the bag 100 times, he comes in and he's like, I'm fine. It's gone. Like, it just moves it out. So in that moment, when you're feeling like, I'm going to say something I regret, I would say, move yourself into the other room, punch a pillow, punch the bed, punching bag. Do like Brene Brown calls it. She calls them the shitty first drafts, where you just like type everything out that you're mad about in the world and then delete it. Just finding a way to outlet it before it's at the mouth level.
Yeah. That's really validating for me personally that you say that, because I'll often find like throughout the day, I'm like, oh, I'm like thinking, you know, my interior conversation, like, oh, I didn't yell. Like, that was really good. Like, oh, I'm really good on that one. And then like the next thing I know, like, I'll be like, oh, I'm like really level-headed today. And the next thing I know, I'm just like blown up. And I'm like, well, I was doing so good. What happened?
You just deposit it in the bank account and it will 100% every single time find its way to the surface. It does not disappear. And that's emotion. You know, they say time heals all wounds except for emotion. Emotion just will stay inside. It will create illness. It will create anxiety or depression. It will create some sort of manifestation of the energy. So you've got to move it. And getting comfortable with it. The fact that you're angry is fine. You can be angry every day for the rest of your life. Just find ways to move it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Let's say you're experiencing more, like less of anger or like surface things, and maybe you feel yourself starting to fall into depression, or you're starting to notice similar symptoms. What would you recommend for somebody?
I love that question. I think that's a really great question. In my own experience working with clients and in my own life, I think that kind of goes back to knowing yourself, knowing you're your own expert. And for me, it's being proactive. So when I first start, a great time would be in the last, you know, couple of years when I had my last baby. It was noticing, knowing that it was showing up, and then knowing I didn't have the luxury of sitting in a chair on this one. Like I had to move. So it's getting a plan in place. It's reaching out for support, going back to therapy. For me, it was this like die hard commitment to my self-care. So every day, whether I want to or not, I had to get out on a walk. It was a survival skill. I needed that in order to stay grounded. So the first thing is knowing yourself, being able to tune in and say something doesn't feel right, and then pulling in your tools. And if you don't have tools yet, that's okay. You know, how I got my tools and how each of us get our tools is going through a period when we didn't have them. So it's trying things on. Try something on. The best definition for self-care for me is something that makes me feel more like myself. It's not necessarily a pedicure. It could be, but it's just something that makes me feel more like Andrea. So in the beginning days of postpartum, it was driving in the car with my music. It was just being free, the wind coming in the windows and playing music. And I would feel for just a little bit grounded back in myself. If it's a more intense situation where you're having a hard time functioning, hard time getting out of bed, hard time doing daily activities, then it's going in and seeing a counselor, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, or your family doctor. It's getting help. And there's just so many great resources out there. There's no reason to be miserable and there's no reason to suffer. It doesn't mean you're weak. It doesn't mean you're broken. It's just a blip. It's a period of time that you need some support and you'll learn from it. You'll be able to help and support people later if you go and help take care of yourself.
Definitely. I think a lot of people think of it as like let's say diabetes, like that'll be something they live with forever. And it certainly could be, but I don't think it has to be. It could just be something that you work through. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So we do have a question here. Oops, I just hit a button. What about anger triggered by anxiety? And this happens to me a lot.
Great question. So anxiety makes us more irritable, puts us on edge. And you want to see me snap the quickest? It's when we're like getting ready to go to the airport and we're running behind, and all of a sudden I'm like, get in the car, right? Like, it just puts you on edge. So again, it's to thine own self be true. It's knowing who you are and knowing how you work. And instead of living in denial of it, it's going back to that idea of like my shadow and my light. Instead of living in denial of the idea that, like, knowing what my name is Andrea, and when I am stressed out, I am snappy. So if that's the case, then I get up earlier. I do all the things I can do to kind of like manage the anxiety, and I give myself some grace. When I snap, I come back in and I say, you guys, I'm sorry, not okay. But I'm a person, I'm learning, I make mistakes. And just like you guys make mistakes, I make mistakes, and I'm just asking you to be patient with me. I'm working on it. Obviously there's all kinds of anxiety tools out there, meditation, mindfulness, you can use essential oils. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do. It's knowing yourself. And a great example of the knowing yourself thing is, I'm an introvert, and I have a lot of extroverts in my life. So I would always look at them and compare myself and feel like something is really wrong with me. You know, we would go to like a amusement park and they would be like on fire, and I would be like hiding. Like, I want to just go bury myself in that trash can. I cannot be here, right? But it was learning to accept that that's part of who I am, and then learning how to work around it. So now when we go on a vacation, my family knows that mom needs a break in the middle of the day. But at some point, I'm going to go back to the hotel room and I'm going to sit in complete silence and just stare at the wall and just take it in. And then I can pop right back in that amusement park and I can go. But if I would not honor that, I can guarantee you 3/4 of the way through that day, somebody's head's going to roll. I'm going to snap. And it's because I wasn't honoring my own needs. So it's about honoring, respecting who you are and your differences. It may look weird to everyone else, but it's respecting that this is the way I've been created. This is the way I am. And this is how I best support myself.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest, I think that's half the battle, is being able to self-identify that you need those things. And this is what's going on. I love that. I also want to just let everyone know that we have 10 more minutes. So if you have any other questions, now's the time. We do have a couple others, so I'll get to those here. One here says, my son gets nervous a lot to the point where he is frozen and can't act. I think it's anxiety, but how can I help him recognize this and cope?
Great question. So anxiety is not something that we're going to solve in the moment. So I would say, let's start a routine. First, especially, I don't know how old her son is, but especially when they're little, they don't have words to identify what they're feeling. They just feel really uncomfortable in their body. That's actually what got me into counseling, was that I had a first grader with anxiety and I didn't know what to do to help him. And I started reading books, and then it was just like I was drawn right into it. So it's helping them find a word for it. It's getting in the habit daily about talking about feelings. You can do feelings games at dinner. There's card sets out there. A lot of times I'll have kids, when they come home from school, do a feelings check-in. And I have like a paper with 3 thermometers on it. And then I have them pick 3 feelings and color in the thermometer. So I'm feeling angry this much, and I'm feeling excited this much, and I'm feeling scared this much. It's just working on getting a vocabulary for it would be the first step. And then it would be learning how to identify. Anxiety is often based on a lie. It's based on a negative thought. So it's learning how to identify the negative thought. So for instance, with my son, when he was in first grade, his thought was the school's going to burn down. And once we could start getting to the bottom of that, then we could start saying things like, my teachers will keep me safe. There's a fire. We looked up how far the fire department was away, and we actually like figured out how long it would take the fire department to get there. We just worked on bringing some like facts and some truth in. And when someone is anxious, the last thing they need is to be told that what they're feeling is stupid or dumb. That's what we want to do. I'm like, that's not real. There's no such thing as a monster. But what we have to say is, that's scary. That is so scary. I can hear that. That would be really scary to think a monster was going to get me. We validate the fear, and then we work on bringing in truth. Mom and dad will keep you safe. You've got your special stuffed animal. You've got, you know, we start bringing in the things that help ground them and make them feel safe.
Definitely. I love that. And remembering that you're probably going to have that conversation a few times.
And work on it. A lot of times when clients, little children come in for anxiety, I'll probably see them 8 sessions, which is really not that long. It's pretty fast. But if you're consistently working on it every day of practicing, my negative thought, what were your negative thoughts today? And then let's move it to a positive thought, things like my teachers will help keep me safe, and you just work on it continuously, they'll start to conquer it, but it takes time. And I'll say for my son that I was doing this with when he was in first grade, he's now in high school, I have found in his room pieces of paper before where he's written down positive thoughts. Like, I can do this. I am strong. I am brave. So it gets in and it stays with them. Then it becomes this asset.
Well, and what an amazing skill to take into adulthood.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a gift.
Yeah. Those are the kind of adults we need in our world. Yeah. Another question here. How do I find a psychologist near me?
Good question. It's tricky. I would say you need to go into it knowing that it's going to be different than a doctor. And a doctor, we spend a lot of time shopping around for a doctor, but this is an important relationship. Leave yourself some room to try them out. So I would say you can absolutely call and ask if you can interview them, ask them questions, understand a little bit more about how they do their work. But if you go, I would say 3 sessions and it doesn't feel like it's a good fit, don't have a problem rolling on somewhere else. If you're going to have to feel comfortable with this person, you're going to have to be able to open up all of your stuff, and don't give up. It takes a little bit of looking and a little bit of work to find someone who's a good fit for you.
Yeah. Are there, I would think that there's some kind of like website or something like.
Yeah, there's great websites, and you can, I'm trying to think of the one that they show the picture. I think it's just Psychology Today or something, but they'll show the picture of them. They'll give their profile, their website. That's a great screen. I would say probably my best recommendation is ask around. Ask who people you know love, who they've seen, what's worked for them. That's probably going to be your best bet, but definitely screen them online, give them a phone call, ask them questions about how they do work and if they're going to be a good fit for you.
Awesome. And there are therapists that specialize in different areas too.
Absolutely. And so a great example of this would be an eating disorder. Eating disorder is something that needs a really specialized kind of therapist. And if they don't specialize in eating disorder, I wouldn't take my child to them.
Right.
Like, addiction's another one. OCD, like there are specific trained therapists in that area. And if they don't have that, I wouldn't go there.
Yeah. Jenna just dropped the link for Psychology Today in the chat in case anybody was looking for that. And I also wanted to just mention that I know oftentimes it can be a financial hurdle to get to a therapist, but check with your employer, because oftentimes, you know, if you work for a larger employer, they may offer it through an employee assistance program. So, and I know even our health insurance is starting to offer options now that for a long time was just a really a dead end and kind of just a band-aid approach. But I've heard some really good things recently. So just because it wasn't an option before, don't discount it. So.
And there are programs that are out there that do reduced rate therapy. For me with clients, I'll take a certain number on that I do a reduced rate for. So don't use money as an reason to not take care of yourself. Like, this is most important work you can do.
Absolutely. So we ended with this question yesterday, and so I wanted to get your take on it too. I just want to let everybody else know that we do have a few more minutes. So if you have another question, feel free to stick it in. So what do you think, Andrea, that we can do as mothers to support other mothers?
That's a wonderful question. Women need women. I'm not saying men don't need men, but women really need women. We need support. And especially mothers, there is just nothing quite like this challenge. I mean, imagine if you were to sign up for a job that was, you were told minimum, you will commit to 18 years at this job, and you have no option for out. Like, this is, you're in this job, right? Like, it's a tough experience. It will be the making of you, right? It's a beautiful experience. It's a growing experience. We cannot do it alone. We need support. So first thing I would say is, like I said earlier, is one, taking care of yourself. We have to put our own oxygen mask on before we can give to anyone else. So it's learning how to take care of yourself. So you have something to give, being vulnerable, asking for help, and letting others in, letting them see your vulnerable pieces. And I'm reluctant to say this piece, but I would say all of us probably need to look at like the backbiting piece that sometimes shows up in, I don't know why it shows up. I have theories on it, but I think that just being careful that we give each other the benefit of the doubt that we cut each other slack, and that we help push and encourage each other to be the very best versions of ourselves we can. I have a best friend who will show up and she'll tell me if I'm wrong, you know, in a very loving way, but she'll say, you're wrong. And she'll also, you know, see the very best in me, can see all the things in myself that I don't see. So finding someone like that's really been a blessing and a gift in my life.
Definitely. I love that. Yeah. Being vulnerable is not something I was ever comfortable with before, but kids have a way of making you feel that regularly. So
I was on the airplane last week and my 1-year-old threw a sandwich and it hit a man in the back of the head and like smeared down the back of his head. And I was just like, this is the bottom of humiliation. Like they just rip away all of your pride. You just have to be like, I know nothing. I am a complete mess.
Well, childbirth in and of itself is a lesson in losing your pride. So
Right. It just starts off.
Right out the gate, literally. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was so awesome.
If you like what you just heard, and we hope you do, you can find more of us online at www.okayestmoms.com. We're also on all social media platforms, Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Okayest Moms Blog. Or if you want to, you can send us an email at hey@okayestmoms.com.